This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Covered in Pet Hair, a boozy show for pet lovers on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez Arada, and today I have the pleasure of having a drink and a chat with a pet rescue advocate that's going to help us learn more about why we should avoid puppy mills. I will tell you all about her and introduce you as soon as we come back from these messages from our sponsors.
How many of you have pets? My hand's raised. Now think about how lucky you are to have such a sweet little pet in your life, and that pet is lucky to have you too. But unfortunately, there are countless pets out there that don't have a home to call their own. However, Bob's from Skechers is trying to change that. So we developed Bob's for Dogs and Cats to help pets in need. With every purchase of adorable Bob's footwear or fun, stylish apparel, or even the cutest Bob's pet accessories, Skechers makes a donation to Petco Love to help save shelter pets. And with your help, we've already saved the lives of over 1 million pets and raised over $7 million. So while you're getting style and comfort with features like Skechers' famous memory foam cushioning, you're also helping to save an adorable pet in need and helping another lucky owner be connected with a future best friend and companion. Because happiness is having a loving pet by your side. Find Bob's at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, select Petco locations, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Covered in Pet Hair. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez Arada, and today I have the pleasure of having a drink and a chat with a pet parent, a humane policy volunteer leader with the Humane Society of the United States. She's an adventure seeker, a foodie, a wine snob, and a craft beer guru. She's a tea drinker, a world traveler, a fitness fanatic, and former elementary school teacher. She was born in Union City, New Jersey, currently lives in coastal New Bern, North Carolina. She's also lived in Green Bay, Albuquerque, and Sacramento. She's wife to Patrick, her husband of almost 30 years, dog mom to a rescue baby named Kiwi. She refers to Kiwi as the happy papillon who is somewhere between 4 to 6 years old. She is a published author, and she is the founder of Empty Cages Press, the publishing company behind Lily Unleashed. She is Joanne Kloster. Welcome, Joanne. It's so good to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
I am thrilled to talk to you about this super important topic. But before we dig in, I want to introduce our drinking game today. So anybody participating in our drinking game, anytime you hear this word.
The secret word is adopt.
Make sure you take a drink of whatever you're enjoying, but please be over 21 in the U.S. to partake. Never drink and drive, and always drink responsibly. So what are you having this afternoon, Joanne?
Well, I am having, due to the hour, I'm having my afternoon spot of tea. This is my favorite tea. It's oolong. I love to say that. It's oolong. But if it was a little later, I'd be having a lovely red Cabernet or a Zinfandel. Nice and fruit forward would be nice.
Yes, I love a jammy red wine like you. I actually opted for a cocktail today that is symbolic. So this is a whiskey sour, and I'm having a sour because I know a lot of conversations and even friendships can turn a little sour when we talk about the topic of puppy mills. So we're going to keep this positive. We're not going to judge. This is a judgment-free zone. We're just going to educate. So if you're feeling a little sour while you're listening to, this interview, just know that this is not meant to shame anybody or anybody's decisions. We're just celebrating the fact that people like Joanna are out there educating and making lives better for puppies in the future. So cheers. Thank you, Joanna, for being on the show.
Cheers. I'm glad to be here.
I am so happy to be here talking to you. This is a topic that's really close to my heart. Because I've been a rescue advocate my whole life, basically. I think in the whole history as an adult, I've never done anything but adopt a pet. Pets seem to find me too. So I don't even think I have a choice in the matter sometimes. But puppy mills are always a conversation that I have to be really careful about because I get really passionate about them. So we're going to start this show with a game like I do every week. And this one is meant to educate again, not shame. This is called The Truth About Puppy Mills. Are you ready to play?
I am. Hopefully we'll do well. I should.
You are going to do fine because this is actually facts and figures that are taken from humanesociety.org, the website of the Humane Society of the United States. So here we go. First question. Puppy mills are inhumane, high-volume dog breeding facilities that churn out puppies for profit, ignoring the needs of the pups and their mothers. True or false?
Oh, unfortunately, that is true.
That is the definition given by the Humane Society of the United States, and I completely agree that it's succinct and very true, unfortunately. In puppy mills, mother dogs spend their entire lives in cramped cages with little to no personal attention. True or false?
Unfortunately, that is also true.
Whew, true.
I know.
Yeah. When the mother and father dogs can no longer breed, they are often abandoned or killed. True or false?
And that is also true.
Due to poor sanitation, overbreeding, and a lack of preventive veterinary care, the puppies from puppy mills frequently suffer from a variety of health issues. True or false?
That is true. That I have been learning and working on my book. It's amazing yes, that is absolutely true.
I think it's very common for people to think that they're getting a puppy from a breeder and it's going to be healthier than a puppy in a shelter. And I have seen from personal experience that is not often the case. If you're worried about a pet coming with mange or fleas or ear mites, that could very well happen if you get a pet from a puppy mill. Is that right?
Yes, that is true. And also what you can't see are the behavioral issues because the mothers are living in PTSD conditions. So they are affected and it's showing that even their brain chemistry is changing and they're creating dysfunctional dogs, which you don't see until you take it home, which is why the numbers are rising in shelters of purebred dogs. I have learned there are over 25% of dogs in shelters are purebreds. Well, they're not coming from reputable breeders because the reputable breeders take their dogs back.
True story. Yes. That is a very good point. Yeah. Next question. Puppy mills commonly sell through internet sales, online classified ads, flea markets, and pet stores. True or false?
And out of the backs of cars sometimes as well. Yes, all of it's true. Yes, that's the problem.
Yeah. In fact, the majority of puppies sold in pet stores and online are from puppy mills. True or false?
Oh, absolutely. And the problem with that is they're not even regulated. They're under the wire. And that's why people are so outraged when they learn what the USDA is not checking on with this whole commercial dog breeding situation.
Absolutely. It is estimated that there are 10,000 puppy mills currently active in the United States. True or false?
Yes, and believe it, what's shocking is that's an estimate. There are more that are under the wire, that are hidden, because they're frequently hidden away in the woods and in the hills. In fact, if your people, this is an excellent book if you want to know about that. It's called The Doggy in the Window. This woman was a former journalist, award-winning journalist, and it's a tour de force. If you want to know about the commercial dog breeding industry, she has it all in here. So yeah, it's amazing.
Thank you so much. That's an awesome resource. All right, next question. It is estimated that 500,000 dogs are kept solely for breeding purposes in all puppy mills. 500,000 dogs.
Is that not astronomically unbelievable? But that's true. There's that many. And then, you see, the problem is, and how many die along the way? They're collateral damage. If they get sick because they're not being cared for well, they're getting sick, and so they're dying. Yeah, my friend, unfortunately, Isabel, it is a challenging situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is estimated that 2.6 million puppy mill puppies are sold each year. 2.6 million.
Yes, that's amazing. That number, I was dumbfounded when I read these stats, which are, like you said, right on the website of the Humane Society's website. Absolutely, it's available to anyone who wants to find it.
And absolutely, it is definitely available. So the information's out there. It's not like when I moved to the United States and my parents bought a golden retriever. You know, we didn't have the access in the early 80s to figure out what we should be looking for. But today we do, and that's why we're talking about it. So I have the last question for you. All breeders run puppy mills, true or false?
No, we have reputable breeders, thank goodness. And those are the people that I try to find and join my coalition to bring awareness. No, reputable breeders do a good thing. I mean, they're keeping and they do genetic testing. They raise their dogs in homes as if they're their own. They care about them so deeply, and boy, they will interview to make sure that their dog is going to the kind of home that they want to see their precious puppy in.
Absolutely. We're going to talk more about how to find a reputable breeder in the second part of this episode, but I want to get to know you and how you became such an outspoken advocate for these puppy mill puppies. Tell me about that.
Okay. It's kind of a long story that we'll make short. What happened was, in my teaching career, one of the best parts of my day is that I got to model writing for my students. I didn't grow up saying, oh, I'm going to be a writer. I grew up being a voracious reader, and I loved reading, and I loved I was a wordsmith, and I loved school. So I went about life, and I went to many schools. It took me a while to get to college. And when I finally got out with my BA in communications, I couldn't get into the field. It was challenging trying to get into the Big Apple of New York. I was either to this, not enough of that. So I flew the coop, moved to Sacramento, and did a little stringing for a newspaper out there, the Sacramento Bee. But then I got my teaching credential, and that's what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I loved it. So when I moved to Green Bay and I finally got the opportunity to start honing my writing skills, I got to work with a beautiful program by Lucy Calkins for teachers. She's out of the New York Teachers College. And what it did is it had us use beautiful mentor texts like Newbery Award-winning books. And we would read the stories, my students and I, and we would just discuss deeply what we loved about this book. How did it touch us? What did the writer do that drew us in? So I was learning on my feet as I wrote how to be a better writer, because I was modeling for the kids how to write a little story. Well, just about this time, we adopted a little dog, Cagney the Maltese, from a Wisconsin puppy mill. But I didn't know what a puppy mill was. All I knew it was a rescue that brought him in. So then I started reading about puppy mills, and I was absolutely dumbfounded. I was totally shocked. I almost fell off my chair. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. The pictures were so disturbing of these dogs in these cages that were stacked on top of one another. They never let them out. Where do they go to the bathroom? Well, guess what? I started writing about life with Cagney, who was starting to show behavior issues at home. He had separation anxiety. He barked incredibly like a maniac when anybody came to the door, wouldn't let people come in. We worked with a trainer. We worked with a few. And as I'm writing about life with Cagney, my kids are asking me questions. Mrs. Kloster, why do they lock dogs in cages 24/7? Why don't they ever pet them? Don't they love them? And the worst, what they couldn't believe is, where do they go to the bathroom, Mrs. Kloster? What? They go on top of one another? And it was breaking my heart. So I started looking for a book that would explain about commercial dog breeding, and I couldn't find any. Well, something in my head said, okay, write one. So I started. So I started writing a picture book, only it started when I took it to my writing group. I belong to the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. A lovely woman who was a published writer said, you know, I love your idea, but I think it's too big for a picture book. Have you considered a novel? And I said, no. And I said, oh, okay, but I could. So I started writing it. And 10 years later, here it is. But it had to be a story that had a lot of other things in it. So it's a coming of age story about a girl who finds her voice speaking up for this dog she's taken in that's from a puppy mill that is having issues. But she has friendship issues along the way. There's intergenerational. The neighbor next door is an older woman who we learn isn't really truly a meanie. There's a reason for her sadness and her meanness, her crankiness. But the book also gently talks about what you can do and how to stop the puppy mill to pet store pipeline. So that's how it all came about. My students.
I received your book. Thank you so much sending me a copy. I have started reading it. I'm not very far in because I just received it last week in preparation for our show. But in addition to your book, you spread awareness still to this day. You're no longer in school settings, but how do you get in with your community to share all these horrors and how people can do better?
And one thing I'd like to mention is in the back, I did work with Dr. McMillan. Dr. Franklin McMillan is an international animal behaviorist. He specializes in animals that have been traumatized, and puppy mill dogs are one of them. And he did a seminal study that I used his research in my book. In fact, Lily talks about it. That's what I loved. You could put all this stuff in the book, and it was so much fun writing it and be sitting in my chair being Lily and putting it all into the book. But anyway, what I do now is I go around my town and surrounding towns at different events. Like my first event was such a success. It was amazing. I partnered with my local shelter, Colonial Capital Humane Shelter, and they had a booth at a home and garden show of all places at the convention center. Well, I had my booth set up with a wire cage and a little stuffed dog inside, a little Yorkie. And it was really hot that day. And people are walking past and they're looking at, and they're thinking I have a real dog in there. And some of them were getting upset, like, you have your dog out in this hot sun, until they saw the banner that said, this is where mommy breeder dogs live in puppy mills 24/7. And the USDA thinks this is okay. How about you? And so it draws them in, and then I get to talk to them, and then I get to show them, talk about my book and about spreading my message through education. And like, for instance, a woman came to my table and she had told me she just got a puppy from our local pet store. And it was, so we know where that puppy came from. And she felt so bad, but I put my arm around her and I said, listen, we both know you're going to give the best life that you ever gave to this dog. But now you know you're going to tell your friends and family, this is why I will not do this again. So, you know, it works out. So it's just about, I go to different events. A lot of them are animal themed, but I'm going to be at a Bath Fest, which is a city in North Carolina called Bath. It's a pirate town. They have a big pirate fest, and I'm going to have my book table there. And as you can see, I'm not very outgoing, so I don't talk well, right? I can easily talk to people, and I just share my information and sell some books, and I spread the word. And because grassroots matters. There was a book called Wonder. Have you heard of it?
I don't think so.
Oh, they made a movie about it. It was about a little boy that had facial deformity.
Yes, I have seen it. Yes.
And it started a movement in our schools called Choose Kindness. It was about an anti-bullying. So I'm looking to work with schools and libraries to have an adopt, don't shop, you know, and get your dogs from shelters and rescues and reputable breeders. And this is why. So I'm hoping to cross that ripple effect with a grassroots movement, because you know what? Waiting for legislation to pass takes way too long. There's been a Puppy Mill Protection Act that was written up 10 years ago by a senator, Durbin out of Illinois. He's a beautiful man. And he really, and he just sent another letter to Secretary Vilsack of the USDA to say, we've got to raise standards at puppy mills, at commercial dog breeding. Dick Durbin, Senator Durbin's an amazing man. And he also sent me a personal thank you. I sent him a book and I thanked him. And he sent me a personally written letter that I could hardly read because it looked like chicken scratch, but who cares? It was so I could read his signature. But anyway, I put it on Facebook and all over my social media because it works. You know, people have hearts and they care. Our politicians do care. And so it takes time to pass laws. So that's what I'm doing.
That's awesome. You are doing really great work. I do have a question, though. When you speak to somebody and they say, I knew that I was getting this dog from a puppy mill. Like, I got there and I knew it was a puppy mill, but I couldn't leave the dog there. How do you respond to that?
And I say, I understand. You're looking at that beautiful little face and you want to give it a home. And that can overwhelm you. So if you either can just take a moment and, right, if you've already bought the dog, then you know you're going to give it the best life. But you really need to do a little more research so that you understand what it is you're supporting. And I know that you won't do that again if you really come to understand that and share it, because there just are so many wonderful dogs in shelters and rescues.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we need to take a break right here. I want to come back and talk to you about how to distinguish a puppy mill from a reputable breeder. I know you're going to be giving me awesome advice on that. So don't go anywhere. I will be right back with Joanna.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Covered in Pet Hair. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez-Arada, and today I have the pleasure of having a drink and a chat with the author of Lily Unleashed, Joanna Kloster, who is here to help me and my audience navigate puppy mills, why we should stay away from them, and how to find reputable breeders. So, Joanna, I know that there are people out there who are inevitably going to want a purebred. There are a lot of valid reasons why people want purebreds. I have friends who breed service dogs, for example. It's so important for them to have a lineage that we know of, that we understand, genetics that we are comfortable with, so that people who need their service dogs, for example, don't end up with a sick dog or one that we're not familiar with what they have as far as genetic predispositions. So I'm all about breeding in the right circumstances. And I, like you said, I know that there are a lot of purebreds at shelters and rescues. So those people can obviously go and look for their preferred breed there. But I want to play a game with you that I've called Ethical Dog Breeding 101. And I want you to just help us navigate how we can recognize a reputable or ethical breeder. Are you ready to play?
I am ready.
All right, here we go. A responsible dog breeder only sells to people in person. True or false?
Well, that's true.
That's very true. Responsible breeders encourage you to visit and spend time with the pup's parents, at minimum the mother. True or false?
That is absolutely and so important. Can I elaborate?
Absolutely.
You must absolutely see where the dogs are being raised, where they live in the home, where the room, what area is set up. Well, you may have some other questions that I'll wait to see, but there are many other things. So you also want to see or know about the father, but you want to see the mother dog. You want to know how she lives. And you also want to ask, how often is that mama dog bred? You know, how often do they? Reputable breeders will wait years frequently because that dog needs a break to have, and then, yeah, absolutely. But you must see where that dog is living and look around to see that it has the comforts that it needs.
Yes, because I feel like if I were an unethical breeder, I would just bring the puppies into my home and be like, here they are, this is where they live. But, you know, you have a shed somewhere else with all of these, like, poor animals just, like, breeding and living on top of each other. So what the person sees is not actually the whole picture. So when you see the mom, then now you're seeing more and you're asking more questions. So that's so important. So see if any red flags go off.
And even if you can look around the property, to see, is there a barn where you're hearing barking out back? Because maybe they just, like you said, they just brought that doggy in. You can get a feel for when you walk into a room, are there the toys there? How do they socialize the dog? Let them tell you how they do that, what they're feeding the dog, how often the vet is seen, or what they've done, any inoculations. You have to have, and you can go online and also see, what should I be looking for with a reputable breeder? You can find that online. From the breed that you might be interested in, they all have websites that show you how to get a dog from a reputable breeder. That's really important. And every breed has that, so you can find it for sure.
Absolutely, I agree. And this list was taken again from the Humane Society of the United States. They have a printable that you can literally print out and follow and take it with you if you're interviewing breeders. Okay, so responsible breeders usually keep their pets in a home-like environment. True or false?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. So they're not going to be in cages. They're not going to be in dirty spaces. They're not going to be overcrowded. They're going to be like in a home environment, because the goal of that is to get puppies accustomed to living in a home from day one, right?
And don't take excuses either. Like, oh, well, we had the room painted, so the dogs are out back. Don't, you know, listen for what they're telling you. You have to put your thinking cap on, and you have to put your detective eyes on to say, huh, wait a minute, that looks like it's set up as a kennel in the back. If you have any, you know, let your heart, listen to your heart, and you can see and feel that doesn't feel right, you know, and see if you can get a reference too. Anybody that got a dog from these people, call them, find out about that, you know, for what that's worth. You know, I don't know how
many. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's true. I agree with you. I would never get a purebred dog from anybody that I didn't see like their dog. You know, like 5 years later, even. You know, I want to see the dog as an adult, not just a puppy. Responsible breeders encourage multiple visits and wants the entire family to meet the puppy. True or false?
Oh, that's absolutely true. And they do. You know, it's frankly, some of these reputable breeders make it a little challenging for you to meet their criteria for having the type of family. You know, if it's a big dog, a really large dog, and you have little bitty kids, they might think that is not a good fit at this time because this dog is too much for this family. Too large. Its needs are too large.
Exactly right. I completely agree.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Next question. Responsible breeders will have strong relationships with one or more local veterinarians and could provide individual records of veterinary visits for your puppy and their parents. True or false?
That is a great point. Yes, you definitely want to call that vet and talk about the history that he has or she has with this breeder. And have they encountered any trouble along the way? Also ask them, why do you recommend them? And see if they fit the criteria that you've pulled off of the website for a reputable breeder.
Yeah. Before and after purchase, responsible breeders offer guidance for the care and training of your puppy and are available to help.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, definitely. They will guide you in the right direction because they want the best life for that baby that came out of their breeder, their beautiful mama dog. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. When you really get to know these breeders, they're so passionate about these breeds that the last thing they want is for something bad to happen to that pet and it to affect the breed or their reputation. So they're so committed when you really understand why they're doing what they're doing. Responsible breeders will also be able to provide references from other families who have previously purchased one of their puppies.
Oh, absolutely. Willingly, yes. And you know what's amazing? I was getting some orthodontic work done and the technician, somehow we started talking. She is a breeder, we spoke at length. She breeds golden doodles. And we talked about how much money she spends on genetic testing and what she does. I said, I didn't know that because I'm on the other end of it working with puppy mill dogs. But she really educated me on what she does to keep that and how expensive it is. And it's really all about, she doesn't make a whole lot of money. It's about providing, making these beautiful, these dogs that they love for people who feel the same way. And so she breeds them maybe once every two or three years. And maybe after two times stops because they just want to keep everything as healthy and correct as possible for her beautiful dog.
Absolutely. Responsible breeders can explain in detail genetic and developmental problems inherent to the breed and provide documentation of that puppy's parents and their genetic lineage.
Right. And you see, that's what you don't see at a pet store. You don't see the inbreeding and the crossbreeding and which dog was bred with its sister or brother or mother. And none of it comes out. And then you get home and 3 months later or 4 or 6 months, you've got a dog that has a back problem. The shepherds have back problems. The little dogs have the knee problem issues that are so common. Yep. And now they have to pay for that. So that's why in my table, I talk about puppy mill dogs being a consumer protection issue, because too many people do not know about this. They also are, then also when they find out the other problem, it's almost like social justice, because you have people coming into a pet store. Well, they love that $3,000 dog, but they don't have the money up front. So they're going to finance it. Well, guess what? The financing, and this is, I don't have the name on the tip of my tongue, but if you miss a payment, all of a sudden the interest rate shoots up like 300%. And the HSUS is suing the financing company that is used by Petland USA because not only do they charge exorbitant financing rates,
right,
they also use deceptive practices and underhanded ways to get you to buy that doggy, like trying to convince you and persuade you. Oh my goodness. There was an episode of an elderly couple. The man was 94 years old and his wife was 89. They went into a Petland and they walked out with a puppy. The man died like 4 months later. He also had dementia. I mean, where is the consideration for this couple's needs? The Petland didn't seem to care, in my humble opinion. But you see, that's the kind of thing you see. And yet the pet industry, oh, they'll back them up. Oh, boy, they got a nice big lobby going on. And that's what they're doing. Do you know in Illinois? Illinois passed at the state level. They banned the sale of puppies. Well, now the pet lobby is trying to overturn that law. Can you believe that? Oh, it makes my blood boil.
I can believe it. And of course, it makes my blood boil. And I wish that people understood better why it's so important to go with a reputable breeder, because a reputable breeder would not have turned a puppy over to an 89-year-old and a 94-year-old, because they would have said, you cannot meet this pet's needs. If you breathe, you can get a puppy is a big red flag.
Right.
Huge red flag.
Yes. I mean, not only like falling over the little puppy. I mean, they have problems, but not living. How long are they going to live? Well, who's going to take the dog? It was just ridiculous. But that was an example. And it was written up by the Wall Street Journal or some big newspaper put that in. And that was just recently. So it goes on and on. It's just so disturbing.
Awful. Awful. So yeah. Responsible breeders are often involved actively with local, state, and national clubs that specialize in their specific breed.
Yes, because they want to be seen as reputable, because they are reputable. And that's why they're affiliated with their state and national organization. Except the AKC. The AKC, in my humble opinion, is doing a lot. You know why? Because they write the certificates of purebred to the puppy mills. They don't care where the conditions are. They don't care what the conditions are. Apparently, in my opinion, I got to say that because I don't want any trouble. But in my opinion, they just write it to anybody at the puppy mill. And there you go. That's why we have this industry called commercial dog breeding.
There should be a minimum standard.
Yes.
In order to receive any kind of certificate, because what breeders are supposed to be doing is preserving these breeds, not damaging.
If they don't ask anything about genetic testing, by the way, I mean, the millions of dollars, when I saw the statistics that the HSUS, the Humane Society, put out about how much, like 10 years ago, the AKC reaped in like $28 million from puppy mill breeders and the certificates that they pay for, so they can say, I have a purebred dog, even though it's about greed and profit.
It is. And it's honestly like the most brainless work, right?
Right.
Like you put a two dogs in heat and of course they're going to procreate. And that's just, and then when you go in further, you see that they like encourage basically dogs, they grab the dog, they stake her down to the ground, they let another dog mount her. So now we're talking about rape and like lack of consent and all these horrible things that are happening to these mama dogs. So it's really either really brainless or really evil. There's not a lot in between.
Can I add a little aside?
Yes.
Okay. I was involved in a something that happened, and I was in a letter writing campaign. The Missouri State University Vet School, they had a veterinarian there, Dr. Vortman, who has been canned. All right. He was fired because what he did is he taught the veterinary school students how to do artificial insemination at puppy mills. They instead, because they don't do so much the way putting the dogs together, they do artificial insemination. But it's what he said and how he told the puppy mill breeders how to do this is you ram the pipette into the bitch. I'm not kidding. This is what he said. And then in the audience was an animal welfare organization called the Missouri Alliance for Animal Legislation. They're a beautiful group that's working to end puppy mills and make more humane conditions. They were sitting in the audience and they put this on their website, and I got a hold of it and I put out, and there was a huge letter writing campaign. And this vet also said about the female dogs who aren't producing babies. He said, well, what are you feeding them for? Get rid of them. In other words, kill them.
Right. Right.
It was this man, and this was a man teaching veterinary students how to treat animals. Don't they take an oath, first do no harm?
Right.
Well, anyway, he's gone. There was such an outcry and an outpouring of letters from vet students and the general public that demanded his removal, and he's gone.
That's evil. That is evil.
But the power of the pen worked. Enough yes. people wrote to them, and it worked. So that's why I have hope for my empty cages. And I work with, I want you to know, some of these other groups are fabulous. There's the group that first taught me was Bailing Out Benji. They are out of Iowa. Oh, they're wonderful. Mindy Callison is amazing, and she took me under her wing, and she taught me lots of things. She turned me on to the HSUS. And then there's the Companion Animal Protection Society. They're amazing. So, and they're smaller, you know, but there's a lot. You know, the question is this. If puppy mills are so okay, why are there so many organizations and people out there trying to end them?
Well, I think that we all know puppy mill has become a word. Those words are synonymous with bad, evil, not ideal. But I don't think pet parents understand just how dark and how deep that really goes and how much it affects that one pet you got. It's not just about the mom. It's not just about all the ones that come. It's also from a financial and from an emotional perspective. It's not what you want because it's going to bite you in the butt later when you've adopted this pet or purchased this pet and then it falls ill or it has a degenerative condition because they didn't test for genetics.
Oh, there's one other really important thing. Dr. McMillan, who did the study, he found when he compared dogs from puppy mills in people's homes with dogs that came from shelters or breeders, the puppies grew up to be much more aggressive and biting and having biting issues. So that's another thing that can come down the road you're not prepared
yes.
for. There's
yes.
just so many negatives that are being written about and are on the internet that will justify the movement to end commercial dog breeding. Oh, and they're also termed livestock. How about that? Because if you were to treat your dog the way many of these puppy mill breeders treat their dogs, you would be brought up on animal cruelty. If you,
right.
if you locked your dog in a cage 24/7, why is this okay? Because they're termed livestock. And we can lock up livestock. We won't go into that issue either.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a whole other conversation full of evil as well that we like to pretend isn't happening, but we all know is.
But there's good stuff going on, but there are people working on that and changes are being made. So that's good.
It's very important that organizations get involved, but it's also consumer responsibility
yes,
to do better.
Yes.
And a lot of people I find when they're looking to add a pet to their home, they're like, they're ready today and they want it today.
That's the problem.
That is really a huge issue for me for so many reasons. You first of all need to make sure that it's not an impulsive decision because that's not going to work out in the long run. But two, most reputable breeders don't just have pets available.
That's
a lot
right.
of them work on wait lists and they only breed every so often. So what do you say to somebody who's like, you know, I wanted a Yorkie and that's the only one I found?
Okay, well, you can get on the internet and there are organizations that will help you get one, even if it has to be transported from another state. They will connect you, or if they don't have any, they'll connect you. So, if you do your legwork, you can find dogs in this country. And, or they may say, well, we have, you know, can you wait a little bit? This one, you know, we'll be having puppies in maybe a month or two. And they hopefully will talk to you about the benefit of waiting. But if you can't, you've got to get on the phone and start looking. I mean, be proactive. Just don't go to that pet store because that puppy is just coming from the most worst situation. And you're condemning his mama to a life of
yes.
hell.
Yes, for sure.
If you go on my website, there I have a video, the CAPS, Companion Animal Protection Society. They let me use their video. And it was filmed with Colatani is his name. He's an actor out of Canada. It's a video of him in front of a puppy mill. And it is so heartfelt. And he talks to you, like the viewer, about the next time you go to a pet store, think about this. You're condemning that mommy to a life of hell. And, you know, and that will, if you just watch that, that'll stop you and it'll make you think.
Absolutely. You have to take your time. And the reputable breeder will tell you when you can get on their list. And they might have a network of people they
right.
can also refer
Absolutely.
You to. But getting a new pet is not urgent. It's never urgent. The important thing to do is find the right pet coming from the right circumstances with the right clean bill of health so that you don't pay for this impulse rash decision later. So my concern is that the more we educate pet parents, the sneakier breeders, unethical breeders, puppy mill breeders will become. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh my goodness. I was even fooled. I went online and I thought I was looking at a single breeder. Well, I found out this is a front. They call them a front. The puppy mills now work with people that have it set up like, oh, it's a nicey, nice little house. There's a little room you'll walk into. They'll bring the dog out. It's all connected to a puppy mill. Yes, they're getting smarter, unfortunately. So, but you really don't get to see the mother, but it's because the house is so nice. They try to pull the wool over your eyes by showing you all this lovely decor and everything looks nice and the paperwork, but you don't get to meet the mother. Or maybe they bring the mother out, but it's really not the mother dog to,
right.
to that puppy. So yeah, you have to be careful of where you're going. And if you find a place like this, you need to Google it and see if it's legit. Go to the Better Business Bureau. See if it's been written up. There are ways you can find out to check on this organization, or even you can take that name of this place and go to the HSUS site and you can connect with them and they'll tell you if it's a front, one of those front sites. What do you call it? Like a window?
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name, but yeah. So it sounds
a storefront,
to me,
just like a storefront.
Right. A storefront.
Right. Yes.
So it sounds like to me, we can say off the bat, don't buy anything online. Don't buy from the back of the truck. Don't buy at a flea market. Don't go to a pet store like Petland and similar places that have purebred puppies in
cages, glass kennels.
Cages. Yeah, they're like kennels. They're like fancier than cages, but they're there to be sold. Obviously, PetSmart, Petco, they have rescue animals sometimes in their adopt center. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about pet stores that sell purebred puppies. And then also keeping it local so you can at least say, I'm going to find my dog within a certain distance, and then physically going to the location is such a key part of this. But then seeing the parent, like you said, could be a double-edged sword because it might not be the parent. So then we have to ask for genetic testing and we need to ask for the veterinarian. And I saw one of the things that the HSUS said was that a reputable breeder will never require you to go to one veterinarian. They'll let you choose your veterinarian.
Good point.
There are little things that you can kind of be aware of that'll make you a detective. And now that we have Facebook groups, I'm sure that there are Facebook groups for specific breeds and you can kind of ask.
You'll get great advice through them. Good point. Yes. God, Isabel, there's so much to talk about and to remember to mention. Great idea, because I belong to a Papillon group and I had belonged to a Maltese group before that. And I got great info. One thing I'd like to say to your audience, and that is in my local pet store, I went down and I spoke to the owner and he was like a broken record saying, oh, but they all come from USDA regulated kennels. They all come from USDA. And you know what that means? Mommy dogs are locked in kennels. You need to say that back to your pet store. Whoever your pet store is that says it, say, so you're telling me then that these dogs are locked in kennels 24/7. They will either say nothing or they'll walk away. They don't want to hear that. Now, and here's another thing that won't, and I'm not looking to put them out of business, because look at Petco and PetSmart. They used to have puppies, but they adopted the more humane model and they now partner with rescues and shelters. You know, and I told my pet store owner, you could be a hero if you would partner with your local shelters, because so many people I know will not go to this local pet store because he sells puppy mill puppies.
Of course. I would never step foot in a pet land. I don't care how badly I need dog food. I'm frying up, boiling up some chicken before I go in there. I'm sorry. I don't care. I just would never go into a land because I know that they do have puppies and I could never support a business model like that. So tell me, how can our audience learn more about you and all the work that you're doing?
Okay. Well, I have a website. It's called Empty Cages Press. And I thought long and hard about my branding. Like, what will represent this idea? An empty cage with the door open. So I worked with a graphic designer and we got that. And I also had to be careful I didn't step on anybody's toes. I'd like this to be known. I worked with Mindy Callison because of bailing out Benji to make sure that my motto wasn't stepping on their toes, because we don't want to do that. And she was very kind and generous and gave me some suggestions. So I have a website called Empty Cages Press, and it has a wealth of info, not only about how I got into this, and I'm very proud of the resources page.
Yes.
Because it tells you what you can do to help. I have sample letters to send to your elected officials or to your op-ed pieces. You can do that. I have teacher lessons that have been, they align with benchmarks and standards for teachers. What else? I can even do Zooms, you know, with teachers in classrooms and libraries and troops, scout troops and Boy Scout troops and Girl Scout. So I've got the website. I have a Facebook page. I think it's called Empty Cages on Facebook. I've even got a TikTok that's going great guns. It's called Empty Cages One. And Kiwi, I learned how to animate her, so she's my spokesperson. So whenever something good happens, like when Dallas-Fort Worth passed that city ordinance banning the sale of puppies, oh my goodness, Kiwi was up there talking about it, and it was fabulous.
I have to follow you. I'm not super active on TikTok, but I'm going to find you. I so appreciate you taking the time to talk about this. I've actually really enjoyed this conversation because you are so full of passion about this topic, and you are giving such loving and respectful yet informative insight into something so dark. So thank you so much for the work that you do. I want to propose a toast to you for being my guest.
One thing I want you to know, everyone, it's because of love. This is my Cagney. Cagney was my heart dog, and he inspired me to tell people, and this is his legacy because unfortunately he's not with us any longer, but that's my baby, and it's because of love. He brought a love to my life that it was incomparable, and my husband's okay with it. He wasn't jealous.
I have one of those too. My dog who passed away in January, I always called him the love of my life, and my husband never argued that.
Cool. Two good husbands, too.
Well, my executive producer, Mark Winter, I believe he's a good husband, too. So here's to you, Mark. And here's to my audience. So for joining us for these awesome conversations, please share this. Please, if you have a friend who's looking to get a dog, please share this with them. Not because I want the views, but because the information that Joanna has shared with us is so important. So here's to a life covered in pet hair, because there's no better way to live. Cheers!
Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
You're welcome. To learn more about Covered in Pet Hair, please visit coveredinpethair.com or petliferadio.com. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on petliferadio.com.